Contra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Now, if you're like most people, your ideas about drugs, you know, whether they're prescription, legal, illegal, it's probably kind of a messy mix, right? Mm-hmm. Media stuff, cultural warnings, maybe some outdated ideas.
Yeah, it gets complicated fast.
So today, we're going to try and, you know, clean up that mess a bit.
That's right. We are diving into the scientific world of Leslie Iverson. His work is brilliant because it just strips away all the sensationalism and looks purely at the chemicals, the biology.
We'll see, do.
Exactly. So our mission today really is to give you the, let's say, the scientific vocabulary, the rational framework you need to think about drug policy, maybe personal use, based on actual evidence, not fear.
And you could really see why this matters when you just look around, right? I mean, we treat alcohol, depressant, huge societal harm. Everyone knows it. We treat it like it's normal, part of culture.
Sure. Weddings, dinners, sports.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then cannabis gets criminalized. And Iverson basically says, look, that disconnect, it's got nothing to do with the science. It's all history, culture.
Hmm. And if we actually want rational policy, we have to start with the objective reality. You know, what is actually happening when these molecules meet our brains?
Yeah, forget good or bad for a minute.
Right. Let's focus on harm, benefit, mechanism, stuff we can actually measure.
Okay, so let's start with the man himself, Leslie Iverson. Who was he?
Okay, so Leslie Iverson, born 1937, passed away just recently in 2020. He was, I mean, a giant in neuropharmacology. We're talking Cambridge, Oxford.
Right.
Serious scientific pedigree.
Right, top tier.
Totally. But what makes him really stand out, what makes his view so vital, is this kind of dual role he had.
Okay.
So for decades, he was deep in the lab, researching neurotransmitters, you know, dopamine especially, how drugs mess with those systems. But, and this is the key bit, he didn't just stay there.
He didn't stay in the ivory tower.
No, exactly. He took that science right into the halls of power. He was the chairman of the UK's Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs, the ACMD.
Wow, okay, so he's the guy telling the government
what the science says, yeah. Advising them directly on how to classify things. Ecstasy, cannabis, whatever, based purely on the data available at the time.
So he's translating complex science into actual policy recommendations.
Precisely. And that background, that combination, it gives his writing this really rare kind of scientific objectivity. He just insists on focusing on what a drug does at the molecular level, yeah, not whether society thinks it's okay or not.
That makes sense. And that objectivity, that focus, it leads straight to the core idea of his work, doesn't it?
Mm.
Which is almost startlingly simple when you hear it.
It really is. His central premise is basically all drugs, I mean, all of them, whether it's Tylenol or cocaine, they're just chemicals.
Mm.
And they work by interacting with systems our bodies already have, naturally.
They're not like alien invaders.
Not at all. They're like keys. And our bodies already have the locks. They're just fitting into locks that were already there for our own internal chemicals.
It sounds so obvious when you put it that way, but culturally, we just don't think like that most of the time.
Yeah.
He's really trying to swap out fear and stories for, you know, basic scientific facts.
Yeah. And the way he lays it out, it's like a journey. He starts really basic. What is a drug? Then he goes through the fundamental rules of pharmacology, how drugs move through the body, how they act on the body.
Huh.
Then he looks at the big categories, stimulants, depressants, hallucinogens. And finally, he brings it all together to tackle addiction itself, but from a brain science perspective.
And the thread running through all of it is this idea of uniformity, right? That the critical question isn't moral, it's mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
It's how does this chemical work?
Exactly. The principles that explain how your body handles, say, Tylenol, are the same principles that explain how it handles cocaine. Metabolism, excretion, receptor binding. It's all the same underlying biology.
And that understanding, that uniformity, that's the only way we can build a sensible drug policy, isn't it? Based on evidence of actual harm, actual benefit.
That's the goal. And he wasn't writing this just for other scientists in white coats. He explicitly aimed this book at, well, at you, the curious person, the policymaker, the teacher, anyone who wants to get past the headlines and understand the biological reality.
Okay, let's dive into some of that science then. You mentioned pharmacology has these sort of fundamental rules. Iverson breaks it down, right?
He does. He explains that all drugs follow two main sets of rules. The first big one is pharmacokinetics, which sounds complicated, but it's basically, what does your body do to the drug?
Okay, body acting on the drug.
Right, and he uses this handy acronym, ADME, absorption, distribution, metabolism, excretion, four steps.
ADME. Got it.
And maybe the most crucial step for how a drug feels is that first one, absorption. How does it get into your system?
Why is absorption so critical?
Well, think about it. How fast a drug gets into your bloodstream determines how intense the effect is and how quickly it comes on.
Ah, okay.
Compare inhaling something versus swallowing it.
Yeah.
Inhaling, it goes straight to the lungs, bam, into the blood, right to the brain, super fast. Bypasses your digestive system, your liver's first pass metabolism.
Which gives you that immediate rush.
Exactly. That rapid onset is often key to the euphoria, and unfortunately also key to its addictive potential. Now swallow that same drug. It's absorbed slowly through the gut, goes to the liver first, where a lot might get broken down. It's a much slower, gentler, less intense effect.
That's a really important point. The way you take it can be as important as what you take.
It absolutely shapes the risk profile. So that's pharmacokinetics, body on drug. The other side of the coin is pharmacodynamics. That's what the drug does to the body.
Drug on body. This is where the locks and keys come in.
Exactly. So your brain cells, all your cells really, have these docking stations on their surface, receptors, little molecular locks. Mm-hmm. And drugs basically interact with these locks in two main ways. First, you have agonists.
Agonists, okay. Oh. These are chemicals that mimic your body's own natural messengers, neurotransmitters. They fit the lock, they turn the key, and they activate the receptor. They make the cell do something.
So like morphine is an agonist. It fits into our natural opioid receptors, the ones for pain control.
Precisely. It finds the locks for our natural painkillers, fits in, and turns the volume way up on that pain relief system.
Got it. So what's the other type?
The other type is an antagonist. These chemicals also fit the lock, often even better than the natural key, but they don't turn it. They just sit there.
Blocking it.
They're like putting glue in the lock. They prevent the natural messenger or any agonist drug from getting in and activating the cell.
So that explains naloxone, the overdose reversal drug. It's an antagonist that just kicks the dangerous opioid like heroin or fentanyl off the receptor.
Exactly. It has a higher affinity, binds more tightly, boots the agonist off, and just sits there. Blocking the signal, shuts the door on the overdose effect. It's incredibly effective.
Okay, agonist activates, antagonist blocks. That's fundamental.
Super fundamental. And understanding that leads us straight into this idea of Iverson keeps hammering home the drug-medicine continuum.
Right, that the line between a medicine and a poison or a recreational drug isn't really scientific.
Not at all. He insists it's often arbitrary. It depends entirely on the dose, the context, the intention.
Opioids are the classic example he uses, right? Morphine, medical miracle for severe pain. Heroin, same basic molecule, just slightly sweet chemically, so it gets into the brain faster and harder.
Exactly. They hit the exact same natural opioid receptors. The chemistry is almost identical, but society views them completely differently.
And we see similar things with stimulants, too.
Definitely. Think about caffeine, world's most popular stimulant, right?
Yeah.
It works pretty gently. It blocks receptors for adenosine. That's the natural chemical that makes you feel sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
So block adenosine, feel more alert, relatively subtle.
Okay, gentle shift.
Now contrast that with cocaine or amphetamines. They're not subtle. They don't just nudge a system. They hijack the brain's main reward pathway, the dopamine reward pathway, the mesolimbic circuit.
And that's where the danger really ramps up.
Absolutely. Because it's all about how they mess with dopamine clearance. Normally, after dopamine does its job signaling pleasure, motivation special transporter proteins suck it back up, recycle it. Cocaine works mainly by blocking those transporters.
So the dopamine just hangs around.
It just sits in the gap, the synapse, stimulating the receptors over and over again. Pleasure signal on repeat.
And amphetamines. You said they're even more aggressive.
Oh, yeah. Structurally similar, but they take it further. Amphetamines don't just block the reuptake transporter. They actually make it work in reverse.
Reverse?
Yeah. They force the nerve cell to dump massive quantities of dopamine out into the synapse. It's this huge, rapid, unnatural flood of dopamine that causes the intense euphoria. And that mechanism, that's right at the neurobiological core of addiction.
Wow. Oh. Okay, so that covers stimulants and depressants.
Uh-huh.
What about things like psychedelics?
Yeah.
LSD, psilocybin?
Yeah.
They seem different.
They are different. Their main target isn't dopamine in the same way. Classic psychedelics like LSD and psilocybin from magic mushrooms, they primarily act as powerful agonists, but at a specific serotonin receptor, the 5-HT2A receptor.
Serotonin, not dopamine. Okay.
Right. And these 5-HT2A receptors are found densely in the brain's cortex, the thinking part. When they get strongly activated, Iverson explains, it disrupts the brain's normal filtering system, something called the default mode network.
A what network?
The default mode network. It's kind of the brain's background operating system, helps keep thoughts orderly, filters reality. Psychedelics temporarily scramble that.
Leading to the altered perceptions, the trip.
Exactly. It's a chemical disruption of how the brain normally processes information. Fascinating mechanism.
But maybe the most mind-blowing example Iverson gives is cannabis.
Oh, absolutely. Because studying THC, the main active bit in cannabis, didn't just explain how one drug worked. It literally led scientists to discover a whole new communication system in the brain they never knew existed.
Seriously, a whole new system.
Yeah. It's an amazing story. Scientists found THC was binding really specifically to certain receptors, which they then called CB1 and CB2. But why would the brain have receptors for a plant chemical?
Good question.
The only logical answer was the body must make its own chemicals that use those receptors. And they found them. They called them endocannabinoids, chemicals like anandamide.
So our body makes its own cannabis-like molecules.
Kind of, yeah. Anandamide, sometimes called the bliss molecule. And THC basically just mimics those natural endocannabinoids fitting into their receptors.
Wow. So THC hijacks this natural system.
Precisely. And this endocannabinoid system, turned out it wasn't some minor thing. It's one of the most widespread regulatory systems in the entire body. Mm. It helps control mood, memory, appetite, pain perception, inflammation. Loads of stuff.
Incredible. And it just proves Iverson's core point again.
Right. Drugs aren't magic. They work by tapping into complex biological machinery that's already there doing important jobs.
Okay. Which inevitably brings us to addiction. This is where Iverson's scientific non-judgmental approach feels most needed, I think.
Absolutely. He is adamant. Addiction is not a moral failure. It's not a lack of willpower. It should be understood, he says, as a chronic relapsing brain disease.
A disease, like diabetes or heart disease?
Based in physiology, yes. He explains that the intense dopamine surges from addictive drugs actually cause physical changes in the brain. It's called neuroadaptation. The brain literally gets rewired, especially in the circuits involved in learning, reward, and motivation.
He breaks down that rewiring, that neuroadaptation, into a couple of key processes.
Two big ones. First is tolerance. This is the brain trying to cope with the constant drug onslaught.
Fighting back.
Exactly. If there's way too much dopamine signal all the time, the brain says, okay, this is too much, and it starts to downregulate. It might reduce the number of dopamine receptors or make less of its own dopamine.
Which means you need more drug just to feel normal.
Right. And even more to get the original high. That's tolerance building up.
Okay, that's one part. What's the other major change?
The second, and maybe more insidious change, involves damage to the prefrontal cortex. This is the brain's CEO, basically, responsible for judgment, planning, impulse control, weighing consequences, our executive function.
And chronic drug use damages that.
It can, yes, especially with drugs causing those massive dopamine floods. When the prefrontal cortex is impaired, the person's ability to choose to stop, to exert that top-down control, becomes biologically weakened.
So it's not just that they don't want to stop.
It becomes incredibly hard for them to stop, even when they know the terrible consequences. Iverson talks about this shift where the drug experience changes from liking the initial pleasure to wanting this compulsive, overwhelming drive.
Liking versus wanting.
That biological switch driven by changes in brain circuits is really the essence of addiction as a disease of motivation, not a disease of character.
That framing is so important. It just changes everything about how you'd approach it. Okay, let's maybe pull back a bit and synthesize some of these big themes from Iverson. What are the core messages we should take away?
Well, the first one we've touched on a lot is the drug medicine continuum. That line is blurry, it's cultural, it's legal, it's not fundamentally scientific.
Right. And the implication there, I mean, think about it. We readily accept really powerful psychoactive drugs like SSRIs for depression or antipsychotics. They change brain chemistry significantly.
We do.
So why the intense fear around even researching psychedelics, which, as you said, are agonists at a serotonin receptor for things like PTSD or severe depression? It seems inconsistent if you follow the science.
It does point to a disconnect, doesn't it? That's theme one. Theme two is the old, old medical principle that dose makes the poison. Sola dosis facit venenum.
Every substance has the potential for harm.
Everything. It just depends on how much you take. And the context Iverson mentions, set and setting. Even water can kill you if you drink way too much, way too fast. It demands we think in terms of risk assessment, not just labels.
Okay, dose matters. And third?
Third, what we just discussed. Addiction is a disease of motivation. Understanding it as a change in the brain's wiring, a shift from liking to wanting, means we have to move away from blame and punishment.
Towards treatment, compassion, evidence-based care.
Exactly. And that connects to the fourth theme, which is pretty provocative. Laws often reflect history and prejudice, not scientific harm.
Mm. Explain that a bit more.
Well, Iverson implies, and other data supports this, that if you actually rank drugs based on objective measures of harm, things like lethality, potential for dependence, cost to society, health impacts, then legal substances.
Like alcohol and tobacco.
Yeah. They consistently rank right up there as among the most harmful substances we use, often significantly higher than many illegal drugs that cause far more public panic.
That's a really uncomfortable truth for a lot of people.
It is. But Iverson, because of his background, wasn't afraid to state the scientific facts as he saw them. And his writing, it has these really concise, memorable lines that just cut through all the noise.
Yeah, let's share a few of those. Key statements that really capture his objective stance.
Okay, here's one that sums up the cultural point. The distinction between drugs and medicines is not a scientific one, but rather reflects cultural attitudes and legal definitions that change over time.
Meaning, society changes its mind, the chemical doesn't. Trust the chemistry.
Exactly. Then there's the one on risk. All drugs are poisons. It is only the dose that makes the difference between a poison and a remedy.
That really emphasizes the idea of a therapeutic window. Every drug has one. Too little, no effect. Too much, toxic effect.
Right. You have to respect the dose. And finally, his crucial statement on addiction. Addiction should be understood not as a failure of character, but as a disease of the brain's learning and motivation circuits.
That just provides the scientific foundation for empathy, for treating it medically, not just punitively.
It really does. It shifts the whole conversation.
So, okay, we've got this rational scientific framework from Iverson. How can you, listening now, actually use this knowledge day to day? What are the practical applications?
Well, one immediate area is in your own healthcare. Informed medical decisions.
How so?
Just understanding basic pharmacology, like we talked about, agonist, antagonist, reuptake blocker. If you know, for example, that your antidepressant, your SSRI, works by blocking serotonin reuptake,
you can have a better conversation with your doctor.
Absolutely. You understand why you might get certain side effects. It's often because the drug isn't perfectly specific. It might hit other receptors slightly. It's not some random mystery. It's pharmacology in action. Helps manage expectations, too.
That makes sense. And beyond personal health, how about when we see drug issues in the news or policy debates?
That's the second big application, critical thinking on policy. Instead of just reacting emotionally when you hear about some new drug scare, you can pause and ask the Iverson-style questions. Okay, what is this drug's actual mechanism? How potent is it compared to others? What's its real risk profile when you compare it to, say, alcohol or prescription opioids?
Using science to cut through the hype.
Exactly. And third, and this is really important, it's about reducing stigma and promoting social justice.
How does knowing the neuroscience do that?
Because if you truly accept that addiction is a brain disease, a neurobiological disorder, it changes how you see people struggling with it. It makes it harder to blame and easier to advocate for treatment, for public health approaches, instead of just throwing people in jail.
Especially, as you mentioned, given how unfairly drug laws have sometimes been applied across different communities historically.
Precisely. Understanding the science equips you to argue for a more just and effective approach.
For me, thinking back on all this, what really surprised me was just how unifying the science is. The idea that the same basic rules, ADME, agonists, antagonists, explain everything from aspirin to LSD. It's kind of elegant.
It is, isn't it?
And that story about THC leading to the discovery of the whole endocannabinoid system. That's just amazing. Science following the mystery.
It really shows the power of just asking, how does this work? For me, I think Iverson's biggest contribution is empowering us, the readers, to move beyond those really simplistic, unhelpful binaries of good drug, bad drug.
Yeah.
And instead, to adopt this more nuanced, risk-based way of thinking about all chemicals. The goal isn't zero risk. That's impossible. The goal is to use evidence to minimize harm and maximize benefit, whether it's medicine or policy. That kind of intellectual honesty he promotes is incredibly valuable.
A really powerful argument for knowledge over fear, indeed. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.